Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
The 2%'s right over here.
Oh, hey, Jenna. I didn't know you shopped here.
Yeah. Anything to support local food, know what I mean?
I definitely do. Though that's not the only thing you do in the name of Good Eats, obviously.
Well, true. I also host Eating Matters every Wednesday at 5 p.m., where we talk about food policy and how it impacts all of us. Be sure to tune in.
All right, yeah, gotta get the plug in there. I get it.
Yep, I'm hashtag shameless.
You know what else you can do to support the local food community, right?
Well, yeah. Make a donation to Heritage Radio Network, the world's pioneer food radio station.
That's right. And I gotta call you out on the whole local thing.
What do you mean?
Well, The Farm Report, A Taste of the Past, Japan Eats. Those are shows that take you around the country and the world.
I'll give you that. So how can listeners give their support?
It's pretty easy. Just go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the big red heart in the top right corner. It's pretty easy from there.
Thanks.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcast live from our studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I will try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Shingo Gokam, who is the director at Angel's Share, a legendary Japanese-style cocktail bar in East Village, and the founder of Speak Low, an award-winning cocktail bar in Shanghai. Also, Shingo was recognized as the best bartender of the world in 2012. We'll talk about how Shingo reached that remarkable status and why Japanese whiskey is so popular now and fascinating Speakeasy by Shingo in Shanghai and much more. So, hello Shingo, welcome to Japan Eats.
Hello, my name is Shingo Gokan.
Okay, so first of all, how did you get into bartending?
Well, that was a long time ago, when I was 18. In Japan, I was looking for a part-time job, and I wanted to make something. I wanted to do something like chef or pastry chef or bartender, and then I found a job of bartender.
Okay, so pastry chef was an interesting idea, but so then you started working as a bartender in Tokyo? Or?
Yes. Okay. It's right next to Tokyo. It's called Kawasaki. Mm-hmm. It's my hometown.
Right. So what kind of place was it?
It was high volume, kind of like a izakaya / dining bar, more than 150 seats. We were making cocktail like more than 300 or 400 a night.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Great. And then you were making a classic cocktails?
Yeah. At a time, the bar cocktail scene was totally different. Not many people making craft drink at a day. So we're just making okay creative drink and classic drinks.
Okay, and then how long did you work there?
I was there for a couple of years, and I moved to a small bar called Potluck, also in my hometown Kawasaki. It was much more smaller bar, and we more focused on using fresh fruit, Japanese fresh fruit ingredients, and a lot of infusion stuff. So it was new back in 2000, 2-3 hours.
Okay, so it's kind of a step up and maybe getting ready for coming to New York.
Yeah, probably.
Right, but why, how, well, when and why you came to New York?
Well, one of our customer, he had a business in New York, and he told me, somehow he said, if you go to New York, you're probably going to success.
Okay.
And I say, okay, I will try.
Wow, is that simple?
Yeah.
All right, so I'm sure you wanted to come to New York anyways.
Yeah, but I didn't have any skill. I mean, I just have a skill of basic Japanese bartending, and I didn't speak any English at the time. So I started learning about tea technique, which is called sado, like Japanese tea ceremony, and also sherry, Spanish fortified wine technique and knowledge. So that's why I went to Spain to learn sherry.
Interesting. So
before I come to New York.
Right, but I understand the tea ceremony elements because you can be a little unique. But why sherry? Or
well, I mean, also at the time, not many people know about sherry. Not many bartenders using sherry for the cocktail. Mm-hmm. And even sommelier doesn't really know how to use sherry as well. So it was like a kind of an in-between item, between bartender item and sommelier item.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I went to some small sherry bar in Japan. I impressed because I didn't know any of the bottle at a, back bar. So... And using a Venezia technique, have you ever heard about it? That's using like long stick to pour over sherry.
Like from high ceiling height.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, and then I kind of impressed all the history, taste and technique, and then kind of into it.
I'm curious, what does it do? The really, like you raise your arm and then pour sherry into a small glass, right?
Yep.
Right, so it's kind of a more oxidized.
Yes, you get a lot of aeration to your sherry, and it's pretty much, and it looks super cool.
Right, it's so cool. Okay. Okay, and then you came to New York, I heard it was 2006, it was 10 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
So where did you work? Because you didn't speak English, you said, at all.
Yeah, I started working at a place called LAN, which already shut down, unfortunately. It was in East Village. They focus on meat, so they have a good steak, shabu-shabu, sukiyaki, this kind of stuff, and sushi. So, 10 years ago, it's kind of different restaurant scene as well, right? So, they had a bar in the restaurant, so I was in charge of bar section without any English.
I have to say I like the food because now the chef Akiyama is at Sakamai in the Lower East Side, right?
Yeah.
So I'm so a big fan of his food.
Yeah, the first time when I was there, it was really surprised. This is Japanese food, but New York style. It was very surprised for me.
Yeah. Okay, and then but eventually you started working at Angel's Share.
Yes, actually, as soon as I came here, I applied Angel Share, but again, I didn't speak any English, and I didn't have any experience in New York bartender, so I kind of, they kind of reject me. And then my friend, he's also chef, Fumio Yonezawa, he's now executive chef of Janjo's Tokyo, so he used to work with LAN, so he introduced me to LAN.
Wow. What a history. LAN is a great place.
Yeah.
Right, many graduates. Okay, so then, just joined Angel Share. But let's talk about Angel Shares because I think it's such a legendary bar, iconic bar for those who are interested in Japanese style cocktails. So, what is Angel Share?
Yes, as you said, it's been quite old, 22 years old bar. It's a concept behind is our owner, Tony Yoshida, got inspiration from a Yokohama bar, which is the birthplace of Japanese bar scene. So he took the idea from Yokohama bar. So I think it was very new back in 1994 speakeasy style. He built the restaurant called Yokocho, yakitori place and yakiniku place and a bar in the same area.
Right. So it's in East Village. It's at the village Yokocho.
Yes.
Right in Stuyvesant Street.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So it's a part of the Japanese kind of shop restaurant complex.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's if you go there, you go upstairs.
Yes.
Right? And it's kind of a hidden speakeasy. Mm-hmm. So still, the spirit is there.
Yes.
Right. Okay. And well, I was looking at the background of the Angel Share, and it was rated as the second best bar in America by GQ Magazine in 2010, which is, you know, after those 8 years, it's amazing. They maintain that kind of reputation. And celebrities, Beyoncé, Jay-Z, Cameron Diaz, Norah Jones, Natalie Portman, Björk, Bill Murray, who you name it. So it's kind of like a celebrity place, too.
Well, yes.
Right. Okay. So what was the biggest challenge in working at Angel's Share?
Again, I didn't have any experience in the U.S. because the training is very different. It's really hard to hire the people all the time without English. And the products was different, the equipment was different, mm-hmm. and the customer's preference was different. So everything was very new for me. So I don't know what was easiest part. Everything was super hard at the time.
Right. But it's just a good point because I think people say, especially bartenders from both countries, they say Japanese and American style cocktails are very different. So you said, of course, the spirits you use may be different, but style-wise, are they very different?
Yeah, the style-wise, the biggest difference, I think, is the speed and volume.
Mm.
Because here in New York, I mean, here in the U.S., so many people drink, order a cocktail, and drink very quick. But in Japan, not many people order cocktail. And each place is pretty small, so bartender can take more time to make drink.
Mm.
So I think that's the biggest difference. The reason that's why the drink itself is pretty different as well.
Mm. So the quicker, easier to make here than in Tokyo?
I won't say easier, but it's much more quicker, and operation is different, and kind of method is different, and equipment is different. So
to facilitate the speed of making,
yes,
perhaps. Wow. Okay. I mean, by the way, that the Japanese bars tend to be, like you said, smaller and quieter.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Right, like a hush-hush kind
yes.
of. Right. Okay, so in 2012, you won a major prize in the global cocktail community, and you were the winner of the 2012 Bacardi Global Legacy Cocktail Competition. It was organized by the spirit maker Bacardi, of course, and it was celebrating its 150th anniversary, so it was a big deal.
Yes, it was a big deal, yeah. That was one of the biggest cocktail competition in the world, and
Mm. How many bartenders competed for the prize?
I think it was 10,000 people.
Oh my god. Wow. So it's global. So it started in the US, New York, US, and then eventually.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And it gathered in, I think it's Miami.
It was in Puerto Rico.
Oh, Puerto Rico. Yeah. Okay. Wow. So, so why do you think you became the number one bartender?
Well, I was lucky, very lucky, and yeah, and then I've been practicing for a long time, you know, I've been doing for already 10 years at a time, so probably the technical-wise, I think it's just the experience, but eventually, yeah, I was super lucky. Yeah.
Okay. You know, it's like, I know you've been lucky, but those other, like I heard that there are 8 finalists. Everybody was lucky to get to that point. But
reason why I said lucky, because I was super nervous on the stage, and And I was talking about tsunami earthquake thing is in Japan.
Mm. That was right after.
Yeah, it was right after.
Right.
Yeah. And the things happened, I couldn't go back to Japan because I had a visa issue at the time.
Ah.
So I was talking about this kind of thing on the stage and I always start crying. And then I couldn't really talk about the cocktail. I kind of lost my time because usually you have to make the drink, prepare the drink, making the drink, presenting drink, and serve the drink. And clean up in 10 minutes. But I used 5 minutes to, you know, talk about this thing and crying. And when I started serving the drink, it was already, time is almost over.
Mm.
But rest of the finalists from UK, Germany, Netherlands guys jumping on the stage and clean up for me.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it was super emotional stage and competition. And everyone is crying and yeah, screaming, hey, hurry up, hurry up.
Right.
It was the best moment I've ever had.
Right. So the other seven finalists, they could have won without, if they didn't help you.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's why I say, yeah, I was super lucky.
Mm. Yeah. But I noticed the cocktail culture, like the community, is very supportive mutually. I'm always fascinated by bartenders. They are really, I feel sometimes jealous. They're so close to each other.
Yes, it is. Yeah, that is, yeah. Yeah, I would say it's the best industry.
Right. Yeah, there's a camaraderie. It's like among everybody.
Yeah, it's very warm. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Do you think it's even more stronger in America in terms of the closeness?
Well, I don't know. It's... I think Europe is pretty strong as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Japan, I'm not sure. I don't think it's strong as US and Europe yet.
Okay, because I think cocktail culture is a bit more formal.
Yes, it is. And they have a lot of different type of association.
Mm-hmm.
So they have more community in the association.
Ah,
so I think
okay.
This is why.
Right. Okay. So that's great, the American culture. And I think, the tales of Tales of Cocktail, which happened just last week.
Yes,
right?
It was.
So that's the national, I think, international cocktail bartenders, the whole gathering annually in New Orleans.
Yeah.
So that's kind of strengthening that culture.
Yes, yeah, that's for sure. That's the biggest cocktail bar show festival in the world.
Mm.
It was like more than 10 years.
Wow.
They've been doing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now I have so many questions today for you. So of course the winning cocktail, that's Speak Low. I heard that the inspiration came from your grandmother's tea ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the cocktail?
It was Bacardi cocktail competition, so you have to use Bacardi Superior at the time.
Mm.
So using that as a base and also using dark rum, different type of Bacardi, and sherry, which is also my background, my specialty,
right.
And tea, which is also I learned before I come to New York. So I use Bacardi and two of my signature ingredients and pretty much that's it. So super simple drink.
Mm.
And I wanted to make a totally different drink because like daiquiri, pina colada, Cuba Libre, this kind of legacy drink is always there. So I wanted to make something totally different from these classic drinks.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. I'm curious. I wonder if you could taste it because the bitterness of matcha and some like umami element and the sherry's right, distinctive, like some acidic flavor. Right. Okay. And Speak Low, why do you call it Speak Low?
A few reasons. When I name the drink, I sometimes take the jazz title.
Mm-hmm.
So Speak Low is one of my favorite songs. And also, when you have a tea ceremony, nobody speak loud.
Mm.
No more speak low, speak quiet.
Right.
And that's
nice.
Why.
Right. Okay. Great. So And then after the competition, do you think your life has changed?
Yes, it was. Yeah, it changed a lot.
So how?
Well, first of all, I get more chance to travel around the world to do guest bartending events, seminars, party, consulting job, open a business in other country. So yes, that's the biggest change.
So it's with Bacardi and with that, because you are recognized as number one bartender in the world.
Well, right after the winning, yes, I was traveling with Bacardi a lot, but now I'm doing with different brands sometimes, but mainly Bacardi, but doing sometimes with different brands, doing with chefs, myself, doing different stuff.
That's exciting. Yeah, before the show, you showed me how you've been traveling, and it's amazing. You are spinning all around the world. So, my congratulations.
Thank you.
So, as the top bartender of the world, what is special about being a bartender?
Well, these days the bar scene is getting bigger and bigger. So it's not just about making drink these days. It's more about entertainment and creating a new product, speaking, speaker as a seminarist, build the great bar, creating the new good drink, good menu. Like, there's so many category of the good bartenders. So I think it's kind of like a more artist / businessman / bartender. So it's kind of getting changing bigger these days.
Interesting. And also, of course, you get to see a lot of people and many places in the world.
Yes. That's how I get inspiration too.
Okay, and what is your philosophy in making great cocktails? In other words, what is the key to become a great bartender, in your opinion?
I guess sometimes people ask me, do you change the balance in each country? And I say no, because, for example, if I go to Bangkok, people say, do you make it a little bit sweeter? I say no, because I've never grew up in Bangkok, so I don't know what they exactly they taste. So for example, in Tokyo they don't drink sweet, but I don't make drier for them. So whatever I make the drink, I believe myself to make the balance. So I don't really adjust each country's, you know what I mean? Yeah, so I would say make properly and believe yourself.
Right. So in other words, you may educating global palate by having a standard in a way.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Great. And then do you think of your Japanese background in developing cocktail recipes, like you used at the matcha in the Bacardi competition?
Yes. Yeah, probably. I grew up in Japan. I spend time here in New York and outside of Japan these days. But yeah, I grew up in Japan. And Japan has such a great herbs and fruits and other ingredients. So the base of my bartending career, technique, style is definitely
Japanese.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, so let's take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about Shingo's amazing speakeasy in Shanghai. So please stay with us.
Thank you.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's unique store in Lower Manhattan is home to perhaps the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan, plus the rarest natural sharpening stones and exquisitely designed tableware. They also host special events such as knife sharpening demonstrations and parties with New York's most famous chefs and restaurateurs. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the implicit and elegance of Japanese culture to your table, be it in your home or in the finest restaurant. For more information, visit korin.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcasting live from our studio at Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Shingo Gokan, who is the director of Angel's Share, a legendary Japanese-style cocktail bar in East Village, and the founder of Speaklo, an award-winning cocktail bar in Shanghai. Also, Shingo was recognized as the world's best bartender in 2012. So now, 4 years after you passed since your baccalaureate competition, and you have a wonderful bar in Shanghai called Speaklo. Of course, Speaklo, the title of the cocktail that you won. So we'll talk about the details in a moment. But why in Shanghai?
Yes, I know it's weird. A lot of people ask me why in Shanghai. The reason why. I have a business partner, she's Shanghainese, and also second of all, it's close to my hometown, which is Tokyo. It's only 2 hours flight, and the cocktail scene was just developing 2 years ago when we opened the bar. So the bar scene is bigger and bigger, and as you know, economy was very good. I mean, still good, and a very international city, and when I was there first time, I kind of feel that the first time when I come to New York, it's like a lot of energy and very international.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So what is the concept of Speaklo?
So the main concept of Speaklo is what if prohibition era was happening in Shanghai 1920s. So it's like a 1920s of like old Shanghai mixed with American prohibition era. So the first floor, there's a four level building, small building. The first floor is bar two shop. We're selling bar equipment, small bar, and when you slide the door of a cocktail bookshelf, you see the tunnel.
Oh, wow.
And go upstairs, there's casual bar and another bar on, another hidden bar on third floor, another hidden bar on fourth floor. So it's like a three times speakeasy.
Right. Wow. So is it in the middle of Shanghai? Like, I've never been there, but.
Yes, it is kind of middle. I would say West Village.
Okay.
Of New York.
Right.
Ish. It is pretty, little bit, yeah, it is center. A lot of the young people and great bar and cafe, restaurant.
So it's relaxed but slightly high-end.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, okay. So it opened in June
2014.
Okay, so it's still very new. So the, you know, you said the second floor is kind of casual, but the third floor, I heard it's more exclusive.
Yes, kind of like a between a little bit more formal than Angel Share, and no standing drink, and smaller, 20 seats only, and more, a little bit more interesting drink. It takes more time, and kind of like a Japanese style. / European style type of bar.
Like I would say like London.
Yeah.
Kind of more, slightly formal.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And I think I read something, you have to be a member to be at the bar?
On fourth floor, yes.
Oh, okay.
The fourth floor is bottle service bar.
Mm-hmm.
We only have 32 lockers, and you put your own own whiskey with your own key.
Mm. How can you become a member?
Well, again, there's only 32 lockers, so it can't take everyone who asking us. So we just offering the people who comes to speak low often and love the whiskey. So kind of we offer the people
by invitation, right? Yes. Okay, and what's the membership fee? I'm curious.
We don't take membership fee.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So it's a community.
Yeah, I don't like to say VIP. We call friends and family.
Mm.
So we don't take any membership fee. We don't take any cover charge.
Okay.
But the bottle is quite pricey, but we choose a very rare and very good selection of whiskey.
Mm. So all the members are from Shanghai or global?
It's pretty mixed. Mm. Local, yeah. And
maybe some expatriates and yeah. Those people. Wow. Oh, it must be such a scene to be there.
Yeah.
Okay. And what kind of cocktails do you serve there?
Depends on the floor. Second floor is, again, it's a bit casual. So it's kind of like a simple classic twist drink, but still kind of interesting. So like a New York style type of drink.
Mm.
And
for instance,
but summertime we mainly rum and agave based focus on, and wintertime more whiskey focus.
Mm. Yeah. Okay.
So it depends on season.
Right. And then so you have like the more casual style, and then you have more formal that's on the third floor.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Interesting. That. Why did you come up with that multi concept?
Well, we found a location, and I was thinking how we can bring people to upstairs, because no elevator, and walk up fourth floor or third floor is quite hard.
Mm.
So I was thinking how we can how people can feel comfortable to go to upstairs. So then I was thinking to a little bit kind of make to change the grade to go to upstairs,
right.
And people kind of feel happy to go to upstairs.
Right. You'll be proud instead of getting tired.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, that's so smart. Okay. Customer-wise, that's not the exclusive members, but are they from all over the place?
Yes, pretty much. 50%, I would say, Chinese, and 50% non-Chinese.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. So how's the business in Shanghai? Is it hard to do it, or...?
It is hard to do it, but we have a Shanghainese partner, and he speaks local languages.
Mm.
So I don't speak any Shanghainese. I speak very limited Mandarin.
Mm.
But I think if you have a business in Shanghai, you should speak at least Mandarin for sure, and Shanghainese would be better.
Mm. Yeah. So you studied Chinese before you opened the bar?
A little bit. Yeah, not much.
Wow, that's a commitment. Great. Okay. And I really want to talk about Japanese whiskeys, because it's very popular now. And for instance, I hear that all bartenders are fighting for a single malt whiskey called Yamazaki from Suntory, actually. And Suntory has been a sponsor. So that is not a promotion, but just purely I hear the bartenders are fighting for it.
Yes.
And I think I checked it even the price. So 12 years, it's around $100. And 18 years, $450. And 25 years, $4,000. So that kind of crazy supply and demand things going on. So why do you think Japanese whiskey is so popular now?
I didn't even know the price of Yamazaki that much high now.
Well, I think it's just a snapshot.
Yeah.
Right.
Well... the reason why, simply tastes great, very easy to drink, smooth, but still different from scotch. It's not too smoky, not too intense, but still have a very strong character.
Mm.
So
the So the scotch is more like, so it's not too peaty or like one style, and in Japanese whiskey more like...
It is, but scotch has more different range and different type of scotch, so... Yeah, it's... I mean, the water is different, so... And the air is different, humidity is different, so that makes difference.
So water is harder in Japan, yeah. right, than in Scotland, right? Okay. So the taste texture gets harder, but I think kind of smoother, right? The Japanese whiskey tend to be slightly smoother.
Yeah.
From the blending, I guess. Or, I don't know, how I'm distilling...
I don't know. I've never made whiskey before, but somehow, yeah, the texture is different too. And, yeah, aroma is very different.
Right.
Yeah.
And whereas bourbon, it's more like, you know, it's like in good ways, more coarse.
Yeah, the bourbon is different ingredients. So the different tasting profile, totally made from corn, made from rye, made from, you know, different type of wheat. So it is tastes very different.
Okay. And by the way, I heard that the reason Japanese whiskey became suddenly really popular is that there's an influential Jim Murray's Whiskey Bible. And in 2015, he awarded Suntory Yamazaki Shirakast 2013 as the World Whiskey of the Year, scoring 97.5 out of 100. So that's like overnight, it became really the popular item. So, okay. And so how differently do you serve, do you use whiskeys, like Japanese whiskeys, compared to like scotch or, you know, bourbon in cocktails?
How?
Yeah, like, you know, I heard like usually bourbon is mixed in cocktails.
Well, it depends on the bourbon. Some of the craft bourbon is I definitely enjoy by itself, with ice, without ice. I think it depends on the product, depends on the quality.
Yeah. So there's no general rule?
I don't think so, yes.
Okay, right. Because, you know, I started to see different Japanese whiskeys, not from just Suntory, but in many places. So if our listeners got a bottle, you know, do you have any suggestion how to serve?
Well, yeah, again, different. It depends on the product and brands. But I prefer, normally when I drink Japanese whiskey, I enjoy just neat by itself or adding a little bit of water to pop up, you know, open up the flavor and aroma. I normally enjoy room temperature and straight and touch of water and paired with some nice like sweets or like cured meats or something.
Okay. Yeah. Right. The other day, I was speaking with the Brandy Library's, the Flavian, the owner, and he said it's better to taste neat or just a touch of water slowly, because Japanese whiskeys tend to open up slowly, and it's not never drink as a shot because you completely waste the experience. So
yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, I don't do shot.
Right. And he also said that because of, you know, different kind of layered blending, so you have to wait until those each layer comes out.
That's true.
And then it'll felt. So yeah. Anyways, so are there any other Japanese whiskeys that you know the labels that our listeners should know about?
I really like Ichiro's Malt. There's few products importing to New York. It is very small brand. It's only a couple hours drive from Tokyo, located in Saitama. It's only around 10 people is running the distillery.
Wow.
Still globally, they're super popular. I think reason why they grown their own barley, they make their own barrel.
Wow.
And all the process is very, very detailed. And I've been there before. It was fantastic, this theory.
Wow. Beautiful. It's like very artisanal.
Yes.
Handmade. Right. So it's a Ichiro's Malt. It's like a baseball player, Ichiro's
yeah,
Malt.
Yeah, same name, but different guys.
Okay. That would be awesome. Okay. Any other brands that listeners can maybe find at the store?
The Ichiro's mold?
Yeah, oh, these something else.
Something else. Nikka is the other biggest Japanese whiskey brands. Mm-hmm. Nikka whiskey.
Right, okay. Yeah. So I think they have a Miyagi-kyo or the Taketsuru.
Miyagi-kyo, Taketsuru, Yoichi.
Okay, yes. So these are the new these ones.
From Nikka distillery.
Mm. Okay, so but the Ichiro's mold, that's more artisanal friendly.
Yeah, I would say.
Okay, great. And then, of course, they are all single malt.
Not all, but yes, most of them, yes.
Okay, right. And where I think I checked where you can find it. I found quite a few at Chelsea Wine Vault, Astor Wine and Spirits, Landmark, Sherry Lehman Wine and Spirits, Morel, Ambassador Wine and Spirits, all those great big liquor stores. So, anyways, so do you see any trend in the cocktail world right now? Like, you know, it's one time I think there is gin, and then what's happening right now?
Well, spirits-wise, I think still mezcal is very popular. Mm-hmm. And American craft whiskey, rye, bourbon is also popular as well. And I think in Europe, Calvados is getting popular, I would say.
Interesting.
Like apple brandy from Normandy, mm-hmm. It is getting popular. What else? And Japanese whiskey is always being popular these days. But in terms of style, I think so many new styles are coming up the last few years, like full of garnish and molecular different type of technique and all that. But I think in these couple of years, it probably at least this year, is it's like a back to the basic and like rethink about the good thing. Like it's not too creative. It's kind of like a try to make great drink instead of doing a lot of experimental.
Oh, okay, yeah. So great and interesting.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so we're back to the classic.
Yeah.
Right. That's a good thing. Right. And then probably for that reason, good products is really becoming more important.
Well, yeah, good product, of course, and detail.
Mm.
Yeah, how you make the juice and, you know, like that lot of small details, how what kind of ice you use, what kind of glassware you use, and you know, using like basic technique but more like detail.
Sounds like a tea ceremony.
Yes.
Okay. And so I'm just curious that you've been working in different cities now. So what's special by working as a bartender in New York versus, say, Tokyo or Shanghai?
I think New York, I think it's very important to make drink quickly because everyone doesn't have really time. So
New York minute.
Yeah, so the speed is very, very important here. Mm-hmm. And also, there's so many of interesting ingredients, herbs, fruits is around.
Mm.
So the product is, it's everywhere. So easy to create new things and catch up new things. But in Shanghai, the product is very limited. Not many about different type of brands, not many type of fruits and herbs.
Mm. So is that because of regulation?
I think it's because of the regulation.
Wow.
Yeah. So it is hard to create the drink and then hard to bring from New York style. But, you know, that kind of situation make you more creative sometimes,
right.
You know what I mean? So that is one of the difference. Japan is very different because the culture is different. The cocktail culture is very different. Because Shanghai doesn't really have a cocktail culture. But
yeah.
Japan has such a long culture to have a cocktail.
Mm.
So the image of the bar and cocktail is different.
Right.
Yeah.
So It's really interesting that you just jumped into the right moment in Shanghai, where the culture is being built.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, right. Okay. And now you have a career as a bartender for 15 years. So what is your plan for the future?
Well, I'd love to open the bar in New York.
I was waiting for you to say that. I hope so.
One day. And also opening the bar in Tokyo too.
Mm.
And that's my hometown, so why not?
Right.
And then, yeah, we'll see.
Okay. So do you have any plan, timeline for your New York bar and Tokyo bar?
In a couple of years, I hope.
Okay.
But it takes, you know, as you know, a long time. Here, a lot of regulation, a lot of rules, a lot of licenses.
Right.
So I hope in a couple of years.
I hope so too.
Yeah.
Hopefully sooner even. And meanwhile, where can we taste your cocktails in New York?
I think it's Angel Share.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if we get lucky when you're traveling.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So thank you for joining us today, Shanghai.
My pleasure.
Right. And where can we find your information about, you know, like your plans, your Shanghai bar?
I don't know.
So the Speak
Slow. It's online.
Okay. Yeah. You just your website.
Yeah. Well, Speak Slow, we have a Facebook page. We
okay.
don't have an official website, but we have a Facebook page, mm-hmm. and we have a lot of information online.
So, okay.
Yes.
Great.
Yeah.
All right. So, listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show, please contact us at heritageradionetwork.org, and you can sign up for our newsletter to get fun updates and event information at the bottom of our homepage. Japanese is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, and Stitcher podcasts. And our engineer is David Tadashiore, and thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lam, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.